You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
Hi.
And me, Brian. I was shocked Niall didn't say something out of the ordinary there.
Well, hey, that's the shock.
A long afternoon.
I
give you a break.
Okay, this week's reviews. We'll start off, as we tend to do, with Dragon Ball Super, episode 76. Defeat these terrifying enemies, or defeat these terrifying enemies, as it says on Crunchyroll at the moment. Krillin's fighting spirit returns. At least it actually got a title. There was a few things where I had to rewatch the episode to see what the title was. So, in this week, they defeat some terrifying enemies and Krillin's fighting spirit returns. Recap over.
Yep. Yeah, I think we're good.
Also, the cloud comes back.
Yeah. Much like the last episode, like, oh yeah, I forgot about that witch. It's like, oh yeah, I forgot about the Nimbus.
How did you forget about that?
It's not that I forgot about it. It's more so it's like, oh wait, I forgot he still has access to that. When he got the power upgrade, he still had access to the cloud. Like,
the cloud was very pleased to see him.
Yeah. Well, hasn't seen him in fucking, what, years now?
I imagine.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
So, the gist of it, they keep on fighting the enemies, they keep on coming back, bigger and bigger.
Goku's got most, like, has it fairly down quickly, because he's like, yeah, that's not Vegeta. Because Vegeta's not, he said he wouldn't come. Was basically his extent of logic, yes. And him kind of figuring out, it's like, oh, I can only beat them by not fighting them, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where Krillin's like, these guys killed me, they killed me.
Oh, the best part there is he's going around, tambourines, the guy killed me as a little kid. Frieza, he boy grabbed me by the next planet powers and blew me up in the sky. Oh shit, he goes, Bulma, what's he going to do to me now? Just like, Bulma, yeah. It's like, you know, smacking her fist into her other palm. It's like, what the fuck is she going to do?
She has all
him?
The proportional strength of a Bulma. It's like, oh,
when,
no.
When did she kill Krillin? I forget.
She might have at this stage, yeah. But it was kind of good. The only thing they didn't use the flashback, they didn't use the original animation for, was the bit with Tambourine, which was kind of odd.
That part was not animated.
Was it not?
We didn't see, they found Krillin's body.
He was
body.
Killed off screen?
Yep.
Oh man, I don't even remember that.
They were celebrating the end of like a first match tournament like World 1, and then great, Krillin got killed while we weren't looking.
Oh dear.
So this is restored some dignity in two ways then.
Yeah, okay.
He didn't put up a fight, though. The guy, like, literally, this guy's head stepped on, and he died.
Yeah, he caved in his head or whatever. Oh, not good.
And so meanwhile, 18's arrived at the island with Maron and there.
I was thinking, how did you get there? And I was like, oh, wait, she can fly.
Yes. At this point, it's easy to count the people who can't fly in the show.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. It's so old Dragon Ball. I was like, how did she get here? It's like, oh, wait, most people can fly now. I keep forgetting.
Krillin eventually figures out that, because it seems to be the plants are causing the enemies to appear, and they're coming out of Krillin's consciousness, so he's just got to meditate, and then he'll be able to defeat them.
Yeah, kind of control his energy rather than just let his fear run wild with his, you know, yeah. Whereas Goku's decided to not fight, so he's just going to fly around on a cloud.
Yeah. And so he does. It's all sorted, and they get loads of these herbs. And Roshi's like, well, that's great. If they did anything, it would be amazing.
So
he doesn't have like a secret move that'll increase their fighting power. It's like, I was just bullshitting. And it's like, Krillin's like, no, Master Roshi, you knew about it all along. You knew the secret was inside. And he's like, yes, that's what I did.
Krillin's like reading too much into things, I think.
Yes. I think Roshi like, might be an awful teacher who knows a couple of things.
Like, Krillin's coming back. Okay, I decided I'm going to like take up the martial arts again because I want to be strong for, not just for me, I want to be strong for my daughter. You know what I mean, Goku? Goku's like, I have no idea what you're talking about, man. Sorry.
Yep, just proving he's a massive dick.
Baba shows up at the island as well, asking for her money, and Roshi's like, are you really my sister?
That sounds about right for family, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, goes home and gets his head shaved. And he's all ready to enter the terrifying arc, which is about to start.
Hmm.
which we see from the preview, seems to be instigated by Goku himself. He just gets fed up waiting for this tournament to start.
Of course it's fucking all Goku's fault. That's basically most of the show.
I quite enjoyed this. I liked some of the shots with when Krillin's surrounded by multiple of the same enemies of varying sizes.
The best one was like multiple Nappas, because it's like, dude, you haven't been a threat in like forever.
I thought the Frieza one, you know, when it's like,
oh, yeah,
50 Friezas there, and they're all like looming up upon them, they're all making weird faces.
Yeah, yeah.
If anything, you know, if things look off model, you could say it's supposed to be that way.
Yes.
Yeah, it gets away with it this time, I think.
Yeah, those worst offenders for drawings of human bodies this week.
Yeah, I mean, they're all like next to each other, so you can see this is something he's not quite adding up.
Yeah, there was a couple of bits of Krillin where he looked like he was regularly proportioned, and it was kind of like, that looks really odd. Well.
But yeah, new opening theme as well next week.
Oh, I'm going to miss the old one.
Yeah.
I didn't watch it all the way through this week. I forgot about that.
Yeah, I have liked this previous theme. And also, I don't know whether they do it very often, but I definitely noticed this week there's like an orchestral version of Cha-La, Head Cha-La, which they played.
They do it during the previews, don't they?
Yeah, they've done that for quite a while.
I figured I'd heard it before, but for some reason it stood out more with it backing up Goku and Krillin doing stuff.
Yeah, okay.
Right, yeah, that was Dragon Ball Super. On to the shorts. There was no Shonen Ishibe this week. So, Ninja Girl and Samurai Master, episode 17, Notice of the End of Being a Shut-In. In which we learn that Chidori is a teenager.
Yeah. Huh?
Yeah.
Not just some tiny girl killing people.
It's difficult to tell the age of some people because they're all chibi.
Yes.
I suppose. But I kind of preferred that idea when I was like, he was like a 7-year-old girl who was like an expert assassin.
Yes, I think it may make her older than some of the other characters who we think of as adult women in the show as well.
Oh, that's true, yeah. Ugh, history.
It's a different time.
And she explains her reason why, like, instead of like straight up killing that guy, she explains the reason why she believes in Oda, or Oda Nobunaga, give him his full title. And why he's trying to, like, why he's trying to do a good thing. And based off watching Drifters, I kind of question that.
Well, yeah, I don't know how far they'll go, because obviously there's the...
Sure.
And whether they'll get to the bit of him sort of sheltering Jesuit missionaries and other things like that. Because obviously part of the thing held against him as being a villain is him embracing things from outside of Japan.
Trying to help refugees, yeah. That's a bad thing these days as
well. Well, question is whether that was really trying to help refugees or just to annoy Buddhists.
Yeah, I guess, you know, you can look at it from both ways. It is a mystery.
Yeah, but also probably, you know, if you look kind of these guys, it'll be easier to buy guns off them later.
Yes, so. That is the other thing.
But I mean, like, obviously, whatever way they're going to comment at it, they're going to comment it through the lens of comedy.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So they kick your fella out of his castle.
Yeah.
And he now says, he's going to get serious.
Well, it's a bit late for that now. You've lost everything. Good try.
I did like the one guard that was left with him at all times to kind of be the straight man to his farcicalness. It's like, dude, your freaking concubine's already left. What do you think was going to happen?
Oh, ladies. Find your armor. I'm too fat. No.
Oh, dear. It also sets up I would call it an arc, but I guess historical thing that happened.
Yes.
I can't remember the guy's name now.
No, I can't. I'm guessing from the opening credits we're going to go through all the people.
He's going to the Iga province. Yes. It's like, to his master, it's like, sure, hope Nora doesn't try and take over our province after all the ninjas in him. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's continues to be an educational show.
Mm-hmm. In, what is it, 4 minutes?
2, I think.
Yeah, something ridiculous.
It's ridiculously short. Right, meanwhile, in Bono Bono, episode 29, we ask the question, is Badger strange? And also we ask the question, do the translators know the word or the meaning insolent? I'm like, at this point, I'm like, is Raccoon using the word wrong, or is whoever translated the script using the word wrong?
Oh, like he's using it kind of like a little kid.
I think an incident is just, you know, Badger just keeps himself to himself. He's very, how would you put it, taciturn? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe he's insolent from the point of view of Raccoon, like, because he's not reacting in the way Raccoon expects him to.
But it's just, there's been so many episodes now where it feels like a clumsy word choice.
Sure.
In this one, I was like, is it just Raccoon? Yeah, as you say, Raccoon being a kid and not knowing how to use a word, or is it the translator? Anyway,
it's
Badger and Raccoon being awful people, and Raccoon getting annoyed at Badger for not visibly enjoying all the horrible things the pair of them are doing, even though Badger says that he is enjoying it. That's pretty much it. They basically hide for much of the episode. They hide behind some bushes and bully whoever walks past.
I did like the bit because I was like, they're going to bully like Chipmunk, right?
Yes,
they do.
They bully Bono Bono, then they bully Chipmunk, and then they bully Bono Bono again for walking back past them when they knew they were hiding there.
The thing, like, I don't think Badger's that unlike Bono Bono, except he doesn't out loud ask questions. He's not curious. He's just kind of like, he's seemingly slow, but not really.
They find some tree, and it's like, if you sniff the bark, you'll smile a little bit.
A little bit, but not too much.
Yeah, they have a little bit of kind of thing around that. Then Barrett decides to sleep and go home and says, "Hey, okay, what, isn't Badger like so strange? Come here, sniff the spark with me." Oh, yes.
Yeah, I did like the way he sniffed the bark to give like a kind of half-hearted goodbye to Badger because he couldn't bring himself to smile. That was pretty good.
That's pretty much the episode, and then it ended.
Mm.
Next week, it looks like at least one of the sisters is back.
Yeah.
So, more bullying for Chipmunk.
Hooray.
Good for him.
Quick Haybot report, episode 18. Nejiru goes to school, in which Nejiru and Haybot go to school. Before they go to school, it turns out that they've kidnapped all the teachers, and Haybot impersonates all the teachers, because whenever somebody at this school does well, they get given a screw.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. And so Haybot favourably makes sure Nejiru is top of the class in each lesson and gets a screw. And it turns out the entire episode is them doing an Ocean's 11 type scheme to steal all the screws from this school. And then they're told they have a battle, but then they want to have a battle, but then the god of screws, or whatever he's called, turns up and tells them, no, you don't get a battle because you've been trying to steal screws. You've got to give them all up, and also you've got to give up being the protagonist for a week.
Okay.
But from the way it's worded, it sounds like he gives up being the protagonist for the week in between episodes. So he'll be back being the protagonist next week.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what my assumption would be.
Yes. But we shall see, because they have had him give up being the protagonist before. So they may do that again. And there was some continuity with this episode and the New Year's episode.
Okay.
Because one of the characters was exacting revenge on what had happened to the guy who was based on... turned out it was based on, what's his name? The author? Murakami.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, somebody showed up who was having revenge. And I was... Because it's like, there's a shot of her, and then all of a sudden she's got a dinosaur tail. And I was like, did she have a dinosaur tail before, or has it all been shot carefully to avoid showing this dinosaur tail? I wasn't that interested to go back and look. On to comedy shows we've all watched. Time Bokan 24, episode 17. What Sanzo Hoshi was striving for was the world's best blank. I'm still not sure. What goes
in that? Comedy routine?
Yeah,
maybe. It's not really a comedy routine. It's like a fucking Jackass show or something.
Self-flagellation.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, this was a little too close to the first episode in being based about comedy, but it seemed to be more about a manager.
Yeah, like a shifty manager trying to get you to do shit you don't want to do, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so they go back to Journey of the West Times, And
they go back to fiction.
Yes. Well,
I thought they were going to go back and meet the author, and I was like, "Ooh, that'd be interesting." And it's like, "No, no, no. Monkey's there. They're all there."
It actually happened in China. Well, there was like it all. There was somebody who the story was based upon. You actually made that pilgrimage. So,
but I mean, like the three disciples were also there. So it's kind of like, okay, I think we're in fiction now.
Yeah, I thought they were just like three regular guys just happened to have faces
happened
that
to look like a pig. And one guy said he was a kappa.
Apparently, yeah, he said he was a kappa. So that means, okay, so monkey is a monkey then.
I didn't check. I don't know whether it's the same guy who writes every episode where characters end their dialogue with a word relating to who they are.
But yeah, all the guys do, yeah.
That feels like every episode.
But I don't think it's not. The only ones I think I can remember are the Columbus one and the Yuri Gagarin one.
No, your man friggin'
Pythagoras was like,
Pita. Yeah.
Was he? Okay, yeah.
Was his thing, yeah.
Maybe it is everyone, remember. But maybe just those ones. These ones were particularly obvious in that the monkey just says monkey. Okay.
At the end of every sentence, yeah, yeah. Pigsy just oinks. I'm going to use the monkey TV show name for them because that's easier for me.
It is easy for everybody listening at home, I imagine.
I mean, like, if you want to go right, you go like Zhang Zhuang or whatever, but yeah. So Tripitak is a massive asshole.
Oh, yeah. Callan shows off her monkey at cosplay and Tokyo goes, that's never helped us so far. Why do you keep on doing that?
Oh, the episode opens with the baddies going over their various YouTube channels that they run as a side business in the past. Yamanda is what's that the small guy's
Subiaki.
Name? Subiaki is really fucking talented. That's some incredible shit.
It's gross, but it's
super gross, but it's very impressive in its own way.
Yes, it's nose magic he does.
Yeah, shoves a food up his nose, eats it, and then has the remains of the food come out his other nostril.
I can't remember what Suzuki does.
Shit, I can't remember.
It's
what
kind
he does.
Of popular, and then Bimaggio's is not very popular. It's like How to Be Hot.
But she only has like cardboard cutouts of guys in it. It's not a very good channel.
No.
I like the way it showed her view count and actually went up one with her watching the video.
So the gist of the episode is that the bad guys end up replacing the people who are supposed to be in the story as
the disciples,
as the comedy team. And
And he appeals to each of their interests, kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah, he's being super shady about it.
He is. He's got the stereotypical shady Hitler mustache.
Because he has a mustache doesn't mean he's necessarily a bad guy. You know that.
In this case, he does have a Hitler mustache, and he is a bad guy.
Yes, but I think it's weird because he's like there's another promoter in the next show we'll talk about who also has the same mustache.
It must be still pretty common, or at least it was common enough to take the piss out of.
Yes.
Mm.
This episode was okay.
It was okay. There was so many off-model things. It was not a good-looking episode. I didn't realize how much like until this one, like how much the animation, the quality of it actually brings up like material. It's like, oh, that joke wasn't so much funny, but it still looks pretty good. It's like, no, this episode looked like butt.
Yeah. Never mind.
we don't know what the alternate history was specifically, but it was an odd one. Yeah,
pretty average. What's happening?
I can't remember what happens next week.
Oh shit!
I don't know.
No,
I specifically stuck around to watch it so I'd remember, and now I've forgotten.
Yeah, ditto. I forgot to watch the next week's episode, the preview last week, so I'll stick around. And now
I watched it yesterday, though.
Well, if he comes back to you, leap in. Anyway, meanwhile, talking of comedy shows about promoters, Tiger Mask Double, episode 16, A Capable Promoter. This is a weird episode.
That's okay, my thoughts exactly.
So, right, you know those bits in, like, WWF or E or whatever the fuck, where they're kind of going around behind the scenes, and they have, like, a crew and camera there while the dude is sneaking around and doing shit? like to try and mess up the other wrestler's thing. You know, like it's like they're like a bit part in between the actual fucking wrestling. Is that what this entire episode was?
No, this episode feels like an idea for two separate episodes, which they've shoved into one episode together.
Yeah, like we don't have enough material in this one, so we'll smush them together. Yeah,
because the main episode is about the New Japan wrestlers going out in the sticks to work with an independent promoter to put on a show for these local yokels.
Mm. And they're all cool with that, except it turns out it's a town full of old people.
Yes.
Because of, what was it, like, not depopulation. I forgot the name, the term, where, like, where the young people...
moving away, so...
Well, they moved to the city and stuff. I forgot the exact term, but yeah, that.
And then there's this other plot about a Mexican promoter trying to get Tiger Mask to join her promotion in Mexico.
Yeah.
And
she initially thinks your man, the head of New Japan Wrestling, is, like, his... boss, but he's like, no, he's a free wrestler kind of thing, which he discovers by, I assume, stroking him on the dick with her foot.
Yes. Yep.
That seems to be the implication.
And they hide her face for like the first half of the episode as if we're going to recognize her, who she is.
Yeah, I was wondering, I was like, why are you hiding her face? Or are you just focusing on her assets, inverted commas?
Yeah, a parody of a specific person.
That's what I was thinking as well, yeah.
You see like one of her eyes there very briefly. I thought, is this like Miss X in disguise or something? I was trying to figure out what's happening.
Yeah.
This episode is written by the same guy who wrote the wrestler ex-idol episode.
Okay.
And he is... I can't remember the guy's name, but he's been writing comedy stuff for a long time, and he got his start with the guy who was the director who did Branded to Kill.
Oh, Seijin Suzuki.
That's him, yes. Mm. So the guy who wrote this wrote the Lupin film that Seijin Suzuki directed, Gold of Babylon. And so, yes, he's a direct lineage from exploitation movies, live-action exploitation movies into anime.
Okay.
Bo-ba-bo-ba-bo-ba-bo, he was the head writer on that.
Oh, dear. And so,
that's a good sign.
It's fine.
Yes. I never got into that thing.
So he seems to have just done the two weird comedy episodes.
Okay.
So I was like, I was going through, like, she's supposed to be various people, and I was like, no, I couldn't quite match it up, because it's about her, and she's got a son there who's like, the cactus is his gimmick.
Yeah. And I'm not sure who exactly she's supposed to be taking him off, but he's obviously like stupid man-child.
Yes, well, he's a hardcore wrestler as well, so he's probably been hitting the head so many times.
That's it. He appears to have a cactus built into his mask, which is kind of an odd one, but yeah, I've seen weirder masks in this show.
Yeah, and so, she's not offering enough money.
Oh, your one initially thinks like she's doing like dollars, and I was like, no, dude, it's pesos. Come on.
There's a lot of good stuff with Haruna in this episode.
Yeah, she gets a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
No.
Both of them using broken English at each other, I thought was pretty good.
And when she shows up at the venue and does that massive amount of spinning on the grass and almost crashes into the New Japan bus,
it's like a glove.
Yeah.
And my other favorite comedy bit in the episode was. The old ladies peeking on the New Japan wrestlers in the baths.
Yeah, it was kind of like it was the first bit of like the wiliness of these old people. It's like, no, we're promoting you.
Yes, we're not perverts. We're just sneaking around taking pictures of you in the nude.
So and sending them to our friends in different towns so they'll come and drag their husbands along.
It's foolproof.
Yeah, but Eugene Nagar's not convinced until... the Mexican wrestling promoter, she shows up in her towel, and then he gets all flustered and agrees. And then they start posing for photos.
Yeah, then they start flexing and shit.
Yeah. Which I think has some bearing on reality, because I think Okada's done a nude photo book. And Tanahashi as well.
Hmm.
So there is a market for naked pictures of wrestlers.
Well, this is practically tasteful.
Yes. Well, I think those photos are tasteful as well.
Oh, okay.
All in the best possible taste.
Hmm.
And then they have a wrestling match, which Tiger Mask wins.
By kind of default due to ineptitude of the other guys.
Because he accidentally hits his mother in the butt with the cactus. And then she chases him out the venue. And then Haruna shouts at the ref, count him out.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's a really odd episode, but I did enjoy it.
Yeah, because I'd seen people say, oh, this is a terrible episode. It's a filler episode. I was going into it dreading what it was going to be like. I quite enjoyed it at the end.
Like, it's a silly comedy episode, sure, but
yeah,
there's nothing wrong with that.
It was all right.
It just seemed weird to do this Mexican wrestling thing like a week after they just finished doing the actual Fantastica Mania thing they do in New Japan, where a bunch of CMLL wrestlers come across.
That is kind of odd, yeah.
And obviously, that's why I don't think they're parodying CMLL, particularly because they're not a woman promoter involved. Where I'm not sure how much she's involved in the promoting, but there is a woman promoter involved in their rivals, AAA.
Oh, are they taking the piss out of the people that they're taking the piss out of the rivals of the people they're working with?
I think they might be. Yes.
Holy fuck, that's ballsy.
Because there's another line in here about how GWM are picking up all the best Mexican wrestlers, which is a thing which has happened to CMLL. Because they got La Sombra and Máscara Dorada.
Then again, they might be referencing something that hasn't happened yet. So.
Yes, they could also be predicting the future. Or there's just one specific person who pissed them off once, and so they're writing them into this.
Oh, I'm going to show you, random promotion lady.
Apparently her name is Mammy, according to the Tiger Mask website.
Yeah, like it keeps getting put in the subtitles as Mommy, the American thing, but he's clearly saying Mammy.
Yes.
Good stuff.
And that was Tiger Mask for this week. Okay, on to Classicaloid episode 16. Work beats Moats, in which Beethoven and Mozart go out to look for work.
Keep forgetting why.
Well, it's to buy, what do they call it?
Leopon.
Yes.
Or the, because kind of gets carried away. Look, you guys got to pay your rent, and if you go up and get a job, I might be able to do things around the house that are useful, refurbish a bathroom, if it could save a bit of money, get a fun, we don't all together, get a new fountain installed, it look fantastic, it's amazing, and then that puts them off to find their purpose and find some work.
Yes.
Yeah, I forgot what the hell the name of the thing is. It's like a
Merleopon. It's like a
Leopon, is it?
A lion with the scales and body of a fish.
Yes, sure.
Yeah.
It definitely does not look like a penis. Except by the end of the episode, it does.
Yes.
Again, this was another one which made me think, who are these leftover Mr. Osamatsu ideas?
Well, they didn't involve classical composers, so...
No, I think obviously
it
can't
couldn't
be.
Have.
Could not be. But yes, the sequences of them going from job to job to job until they end up being Yakuza.
That was pretty good.
That was pretty good. And then once Liszt got into her head that she also wanted a Meliopon, and what it ended up looking like was also...
And she's actually a really good sculptor, it turns out.
Yes.
I did like the bit with Chopin being in his outdoors phase.
Yes.
All these fucking YouTube followers. Or I think they call it YoTube in this. But because I was like, yeah, he actually did like going on holidays and stuff, mostly for his health. But I was like, you're being accurate with your classical composers again, show. But yeah, that was pretty fun. And him accidentally stumbling upon the guys who'd not only forgotten what they were doing, but who they were.
And then Schubert falling into Chopin's behavior back at the house.
Just being depressed.
This is good. We'll stop soaking over there. What's your problem?
Them also, with the bit where they work in the convenience store, it did kind of remind me of...
Mr. Nietzsche.
Yeah, Mr. Nietzsche. I was like, do all convenience stores look the same? Because holy crap.
Yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much.
Good stuff.
The same mix of people working in them, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much,
I think every Tesco you've been to, you've
got into a
good year. They come in varying sizes, that's all.
So what are the jobs there? They try and get jobs as they go back to the company that back runs, and they're told they don't they can't have jobs there, but they try and find them jobs as like music instructors,
which they're like, they're being massive like prima donnas about the whole thing.
Well, yes, because Mozart's annoyed. Well, no, Mozart's happy because he's getting to play his booby song, which of course is completely unsuitable for teaching children music. And then Mozart seems to be getting angry at Sorry, Beethoven seems to be getting angry at Mozart, but he's in fact getting angry at the piano.
Which isn't perfectly in tune.
Yes.
Yes. The state of the convenience shop, the window washers.
Yeah,
there's a lot of like quick ones and you're done.
Quick ones like that. There was what was it there? There was one that really just kind of jumped out at me because I knew it was referenced to some other thing. It's like, I don't know what it is.
Oh, shit. Fuck. I think I remember that happening as well.
Yeah.
And they're getting stuff out of the free job paper. That's how they got the convenience store job. And they seem to be jobs for women, which I assume would make sense if you're in Japan, but...
Yeah, well, they were looking at the page for maids and shit like that, and they were like, this one has more zeros.
I thought is this an app for to be a sex line operator? That was my first instinct.
Yeah, I assumed it was something seedy, but I suspect if you knew those types of papers, you'd know exactly what they're referring to, which would have another zero on it over being a maid.
Right, yeah. What I found really amusing in this episode, they've Beethoven and Mozart, kind of from their personalities and shit so far, it seemed to be like an odd couple, but they get on really well. They work surprisingly well. I mean, they don't actually work, but they work surprisingly well together as a pair.
They helped out those old people.
Yeah, they got all the tea in.
And then spent all the money they'd earned before they got back home.
But they brought the tea.
Then briefly forgot who they were there. Thought they were, I guess, some old couple who had lived in this tea-growing area all their lives.
But everyone knew them as their old personas, which is fucking amazing. And in the meantime, they've carved a giant penis statue. It doesn't show that it's a penis, but it's definitely a penis.
Yeah.
Wait. It's quite water, too.
Of course.
Hmm.
And they insist on installing it in the bathroom.
Yeah, because they're all really impressed with it as well. That was the best bit, is the fact that Kanai is not shocked or disgusted. She seems to be as into it as everybody else.
The only thing she's bugged out about is how do you think we're going to fit this in the bathroom? Because it must be fucking 8-10 foot tall.
Yes.
Oh,
this was a good episode.
Quite good.
Right, on to our final comedy. Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid, episode 3. Start of a new life, open brackets. That doesn't go well, of course, close brackets.
Uh-oh. I could have told you that. It's a comedy, dude.
In which our three heroines move to a new apartment.
See, I was saying it last week. I was like, this place is going to get very packed if they get more dragons. And that was the start of the episode. It was like, we need more space.
Way ahead of you.
Asked and answered.
And they are doing all the things you do when you're moving, like when you're packing away the books. You thought, I remember this book. And you start to sit down and start reading it.
Yeah,
I'm always doing that whenever I'm trying to find a book. I find a different one, and I start reading that one instead.
I try not to look at the cover when I'm putting away books to move, because otherwise, I'll just end up reading them.
And the dragons find Kobayashi's pictures when she was a child.
Yeah, and they get invested in that.
They find the maid costumes she had hanging in the back of the wardrobe. And it's like, I tried it on, but it looked bad. You try it on. It's like, okay. And Toru tries it on, which isn't much far removed from her current costume, but whatever.
They all think it looks pretty great. It's slightly more maroon, I guess.
It's a different kind of style of a cutout. Anyways.
Yeah. So they got an apartment with a communal roof area.
Which is perfect because the dragons can stretch out.
Yes.
Yes, and it can hose them down for a bath.
Yep.
And then they have, in order to get out of going to a work party, they have their own party in the
new flat. You could have just said you had a party, but I guess, I don't know, proof?
I think they also probably wanted the pair of them wanted to get together and talk about maids.
Probably, yeah. An excuse for them to go drinking themselves.
Yes. And Toru gets jealous that she's invited her colleague.
So she invites some of her friends.
Yes. Quetzalcoatl and Fafnir.
Yep.
Who shows up at the door as a dragon.
Yes. Oh, wait a minute. Dude, don't embarrass me. Everything's on about.
Turn it to a butler.
Yes. You have to be some kind of, in your human form, some kind of service industry operative.
That's what Kobayashi's into.
And then she's scandalized by the clothes Quetzalcoatl's wearing.
Which isn't much.
No.
But, yeah.
It's like, you walked here in that? Yes. Is there a problem? Don't be so judgy, Kobayashi.
Well, she clearly likes people to cover up entirely, what with the maid thing.
Yes.
Very prudish.
Yeah, and Makoto gets Fafnir playing video games.
He gets him playing Dark Souls.
Yes. He's just playing, no, it's not Dark Souls. It's
totally Dark Souls.
Dark Souls.
They have Dark Souls and Mario Kart, so these guys are all right by me.
And because he's got a curse on him to guard some treasure, he just keeps on going for the treasure chests all the time. Yep. And we also learned that apparently Quetzalcoatl was tricked into eating some cursed food at some point, which made her lose her status as being a goddess.
I'm trying to remember the specifics of that, but there's so much in like
what does she ask them to call herself? Her?
She's got like a short...
Koa. My brain was like Lottl, but yeah, that's probably close to like a Japanese name or something.
It's like, it's like Quetzalcoatl, so I suppose it's kind of that's kind of Quetzalcoatl. Yeah, the kind of that's like that little bit you can kind of take out as Lukoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cue the winged serpent. and then there's some others. There's like a couple of the really short skits with Kobayashi accidentally coming home and going to the wrong house after she's moved.
I feel like I've done that.
I've heard that happened to people, but it never happened to me.
It's when you're running on like autopilot after like a long day.
I mean, when I went back to York after 13 years since I'd left there, I did have to fight the urge to walk back to my old flat.
Yeah, rather it's just than so get fucking ingrained. Yeah.
Anything else to add on this? It continues to be quite pleasant.
Yeah, it's good. It's solid. It's a real easy watch. And this was not really on my radar at all when we were putting together our own little previews for the season.
It wasn't one that we had. We got to keep an eye on that one, that kind of thing. Yeah.
No.
But I'm quite ticking with it now.
All right, we'll see what happens next week. I know they've got to work. I know somehow those two other dragons become regular characters.
Yeah, and we still have to meet another dragon, don't
we? We do, yes. Because the end theme sung by the four female dragons.
Yeah.
Fafnir gets cut out of that. He doesn't get to be part of that dragon girl group.
He wouldn't want to be anywhere.
For it. Yeah.
Okay, and we wrap up with Akka.
Okay.
13 Territory Inspection Department, Episode 3, The Swirling Smoke of Rumours in the Castle.
Right. Put your conspiracy hats on, guys.
Okay.
Throw out all of last week's theories.
Potentially, but potentially he could still be bullshitting people.
He could be. But the best thing about this is the bit where he thinks that Moe has asked him out on a date.
Yeah, because when she kind of shows up looking like stunning and he's like, oh my God, I'm so glad I stayed with the company. And then there's not like, fuck. Which is like, this isn't like a date or anything.
Asked you here on business.
Oh, dear. That makes me think he's probably sincere. But,
So the crux of this episode is that everyone gets invited to the capital.
Oh, it's for his coming. The
prince's coming of age ceremony.
Schwan.
Yeah, the king's nephew, because he only had daughters.
It's his grandson.
Yeah, grandson.
Oh, sorry, not nephew. You're right. Yeah, grandson. Because his youngest daughter had a kid who's having his coming of age.
Now the heir to the throne because it's in his male succession only.
And he's apparently some eejit who assumes his grandfather's abdicating because he's old.
He's
as
99
fuck.
Years old.
And he's the one character who we know the motives of because he says them out loud to his guard.
And he's very stupid.
Maggie, yes. So he's like, the king's going to make me the king. He's going to step down. I'll be the king and then I'll disband Akka.
That's the first thing I'm going
to
do.
Return all power to the throne.
Yeah. We don't need power for the people. I'm going to dissolve the parliament and just have the king be the fucking guy. I can protect the country. Pfft, my fucking royal family protects the country.
So these values of peace have been, you know, they've been completely backwards, and you know, we've got to be back to the glory days when, I guess, royal families and governments and kingdoms went to war, I guess. He's really kind of throwing out a lot of, like, you know, progressive policies and government building over the last century or so. I don't know why.
Yeah, I like the way his servant or handler or whatever is just like kind of trying to treat him I'm not going to say anything if it will insult him, but I'm going to say, like, do the minimal amount of fucking thing, and he's getting really frustrated with that.
Yes. So you also meet from, like, the, so we got Falca, the second Schwan, his Schwan's guard or aide.
He's the president of the Privy Council.
No, Kvarum is the president. I'm talking about Maggie, the one who's with Schwan.
Oh, right.
Yeah, oh, okay.
The Privy Council's Kvarum, who's the one who also seems to be doing some
scheming,
yes. Or not having to do any scheming because the king's behaving exactly as you expected the king to behave, but... If the king doesn't behave how he expects him to behave, then some scheming will be in order, and that's probably why he's invited everybody here today.
Yeah, it seems really odd, because everyone's thinking, like, some big shit must be going down, because he's not only inviting all the head guys and all their subordinates, but also all their subordinates. It's really weird to have this many people all together in one place. So it's kind of freaking everyone out, and everyone's super suspicious of one guy.
Yes, because everybody, for some reason, is looking at G-Notice.
It's like, it's him. I know it's him.
Part of the reason, I think part of it, though, is like, why is he being invited here?
Yeah, the fact that he's invited makes him even more suspicious.
Also, he seems to be flouting some royal decorum where cigarettes aren't...
we find out why cigarettes are...
Cigarettes are prohibited now because they were banned because there was concerns over the king's health.
Well, yes. It appears to be working. He's fucking 100 years old.
He's just smoking right there on the balcony outside the main throne room. What
so, are you of the opinion of the theory? Have you heard the theory
that they're about doing about?
So, that G-Notice is some sort of illegitimate... Well, Gene and Rota are some sort of illegitimate heirs to the throne.
Yeah,
because they share the same vices as the king. The love of sweets and the love of cigarettes.
I got the cigarettes bit. I didn't hear about the cake, but that makes total sense. They even go for, like, she veers toward the king's favorite kind of cake, whatever it was.
Well, in part that's because Nino tells her that's the king's favorite.
Yeah, no, but doesn't she have I thought she had an eye in it beforehand. Okay,
possibly,
fair enough.
Yeah. But yeah. So Lotta Nino are there as well, because Nino's there covering it as a journalist and also covering it as a spy.
But for who? For everyone, maybe.
Well, yes, because he's working for Grossula. Mauve has made him and basically pointed out to Grossula that she's like, oh, I didn't know he was one of Jean's friends. So it's like...
Mm-hmm. And then she knows.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
And he also seems to be answering to somebody else because someone rings him up.
And he has to stop informing one guy so he can start informing the guy over the phone. Jesus Christ, man.
So Lilium discloses that he thinks Grossula's setting Jean up because Grossula's really the one who's behind the coup d'etat.
Which you think it does kind of... It did the whole him saying he's going to disband the company and or the organization, then say, change my mind, makes him already look suspicious, but is he trying to throw that suspicion onto Jean in the meantime?
And Mauve thinks it's... sort of the heads of some of the outlying regions.
Yeah.
One of which we learn is one of Lilium's brothers.
Hmm. Yeah, they're basically concerned that if Schwan would take on the throne, because he's a fucking idiot, didn't want it to happen, so in this decade, it instigate the coup to depose him.
Yeah. It seems to be kind of suggestion with the... what's the guy with the grey beard again?
Beard.
Kvarum.
Like his suggestion seems to be, and a lot of people's things seem to be, shit's going to go down if things start going differently than they want. You know?
Yes.
It's like, as long as the king keeps doing what he's supposed to and not what he's not supposed to, everything will be fine. And it's that kind of like veiled threat of it, you know? Yeah.
I'm trying to get. Sorry.
No. I was going to say, which is possibly why the king didn't abdicate in this case. Because it's like, I'm going to keep shit going. Or is the king just a puppet? We don't fucking know at this rate.
I'm trying to get a bead on where Mauve is at in all this. Because she lays out her concerns about this, saying, well, there's some people that think that the this coup, you know, if Swann were to attempt the throne, it would be a disgrace and want to stop that happening. So is she wanting to prevent the coup, or is she wanting to go along with the coup should it come to the stage? Well, I presume maybe she could go either way.
Yeah, see, the thing is, like, she's asked Jean to keep an eye out for any of the stuff to do with the coup, right? And that could be for the reason of she's trying to do her job and is being prevented by her superiors from doing her job of keeping the place safe. Or she's instigating the coup and wants to put out feelers to see if anyone else is spotting this.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's again, like, we threw out a lot of theories, but there's still even the amount of explanation done this episode. It's kind of like, I still don't know who's doing what.
Yeah, and then what Lilium says to Jean as well, you know, feeding him his version of what he thinks of things. Again, is he for straight out or lays against it the out. Coup? Again.
Yeah, him laying out to Jean, everyone assumes you're instigating the coup. And yeah. I'm good at fucking telling if you're lying, so are you going to lie to me? And Jean doesn't even say, no, that I'm definitely not instigating the coup. He says, what a bother. And it's like, oh, you're telling the truth. And it's like, well, that could be fucking the truth, because he is fucking instigating the coup. But yeah, again.
But yeah, he's agreed to work with Mauve and he agrees to work with Lilium. But doesn't tell either of them that...
He's working for both.
Yes.
Oh, God.
I'm hoping that Jean just agrees to work with whoever asks him to work. Because I'm kind of expecting Kavaram to do the same.
Septuple crosses.
It's just for an easy life.
Yeah.
And obviously because he fancies Mauve.
Yeah. But
and as sexy cartoon characters go, she is a pretty well-drawn sexy cartoon character.
She is. Jean just wants two things out of her life. Some cigarettes and Mauve's number. Whoever gets him those, you got to work forever, kill whoever he needs to.
Like, this is like a fairly straightforward as the episodes have been so far, and yet we still have all these questions, which is pretty great.
Yeah, and Not got to come along as well, much to the annoyance of the Atoli, Moles and Kelly, because they were like, they all wanted to go and eat these cakes.
Well, who was it who looked at Jean's sister again? Was like, holy crap, she's gorgeous.
It's Prince.
Oh, the Prince.
It was the Prince. I knew there was someone else who did it. So, yeah, again, that kind of suggests like this kingly majesty that everyone's just attracted to her from across a room or across the road or whatever the hell.
It's the Emperor is hacky.
Yeah, something like that.
With the charisma.
Yeah, this is a really good show. Easily the best thing I'm watching every week at the moment.
Yeah, and it'll be so easy for it to be like too busy, but it keeps your brain ticking away, but it has plenty of time to do it in and kind of leaves it open like that. I enjoy that.
Yeah, this is one like you. I pay attention to TV anyway when I watch it, but this especially so, because just a throwaway line could probably not be a throwaway, and this could be what gives away every detail of this a secret thing that's about to happen. You know, I can't. Going back, well, I haven't gone back over an episode yet. I feel like at some point when something happens, I might do that and see.
That changes this context.
Were there things here that guys know would indicate disturbance happening?
I started drawing up an Excel spreadsheet of
like red strings going from place to place.
What does this guy think of that guy?
Good. It really does a really good. The pacing is so far excellent. You're paying attention, sitting up watching it, but it doesn't feel taxing. If that makes sense, you know.
Yeah.
Mm. Which is, I think, a difficult kind of balance to have.
Yep, it's good stuff. Also, the advantage of your you're thinking. You know, it's a closed system politics rather than having to think about real world politics for half an hour.
Yeah, and the fact that it's like a fake country, and I don't have to deal with anything else. Like, this doesn't relate to reality. Yeah. That's nice.
It's going to have an ending, and then we can all move on with our lives.
Yeah,
I guess that's that's a bonus.
Yeah, I guess, well, to keep the next episode preview to just a still image, and a bit of voiceover. So like, you can't, you know, you can't wait till next week. You know, you can have all your theories going, but we're not going to give even a crumb of what might happen next.
Mm.
Right, that ends this week's episode of Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. Be back next week to hang with the Let's Go gang. And if you can't get enough of us, why not check out our regular podcasts at secretofthesailormadness.com and dynamiteinthebrain.com. Goodbye.
Oi. Ta-ta.
And let me stop.